The rates of drug addiction among young people in the U.S. fluctuate from year to year, but the numbers are still alarmingly high. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention estimate nearly 35,000 teenagers died from drug overdoses last year. While drug addiction is certainly challenging for the young addicts themselves, it can also be devastating to their families. Now a new book offers parents a way to help their children and themselves through the process. Amazing Grief, a healing guide for parents of young addicts, has just been released. It was written by the Reverend Charles Harper, a longtime Sedona resident, now a counselor at the Betty Ford Clinic. He joins us today to talk about the book. Thank you so much for your time today, Reverend Harper.
My pleasure.
The first thing I noticed is, of course, the title, Amazing Grief. It seems to be a play on the term Amazing Grace. And when it comes to addiction, do you see a connection between grief and grace?
Absolutely. Many of us never get the opportunity to know what it's like to feel powerless and feel as if we need to develop our spiritual or emotional lives. For many of us, our egos can actually successfully negotiate through most of our lives. For people who are addicted, at some point in their lives, they realize that their ego can no and self-will can no longer do it alone. So they come to a place of wanting and needing spiritual bread, emotional insight, intellectual understanding, and physical well-being. So when we get to that point of addiction, we feel as if it's the end of the world. It's the worst day of our lives. But then through the miracle of spiritual alchemy, through the process of connecting with people who share their own experience, strength, and hope, something quite wonderful happens. We begin a journey that we might not have otherwise ever taken on a road less traveled, and that road less traveled is a spiritual path. And spiritual is different than religion. I'm not necessarily talking about a Christian God or a Judeo-Christian God or a Buddhist understanding of consciousness. I am talking about our own sense of connectedness to a wider universe.
Now, your book focuses on young addicts, and I'm wondering if they are better or worse, I hate to use that word, but at getting rid of their egos in order to find sobriety than adults might be.
That's a really good question because it is a very difficult group to work with. Adults oftentimes have exercised their self-will. They might have experienced quite a bit of success in their lives as family people, as business people, as professionals of one kind or another. And then it's all collapsed in on them when they find themselves in a place of moral and spiritual bankruptcy, or they've lost their home, their marriage, their families, and they truly know what it means to be on the edge of oblivion. For adolescents, for young people, we basically are as a culture in the process of training them to become successful, to be able to develop their egos so that they can negotiate real life, whether it's school or college or graduate school or the beginning years of their professional career. We encourage that kind of self-reliance and self-will. And they're not always held accountable and responsible. They don't always realize the full consequences of their choices. And so when they go on the course of addiction, which is not a choice, we believe it's a disease, we tend to, as parents, because we're very good at letting go and letting God when it comes to us, but we're not very good about doing that when it comes to the apples of our eyes, our children. So to let them hit bottom, to let them feel the full consequences of increasingly bad choices is a very difficult thing. And so it's a constant struggle to find what it is that will motivate a young person to see themselves as the beautiful, wonderful human beings that they are, worthy of love and respect.
Reverend, in your longtime work with young addicts in Sedona and now at the Betty Ford Clinic, do you feel that social media is upping the ante a little bit and making it easier for kids to become hooked on drugs, giving them more opportunities?
Absolutely, because the information is far more prevalent. And so for kids who are constantly engaged in social media, their identity becomes wrapped up in what advertising, corporate culture would like them to purchase, what their peer groups say they should be, and then they begin to let other people and other situations in their life define who they are.
Reverend, your book, Amazing Grief, is somewhat of a workbook for parents. What do you think are the absolute essentials as far as homework when it comes to parents working through their child's drug addiction and to take care of themselves as well?
The best effort that a parent can make is to look at themselves and to begin to reflect on their own spiritual journey and where they are, and to go through the stages of grief with consciousness and with awareness, so that as they go through this process, it doesn't control them, and they're not just rushing from stone to stone looking for the next solution to their child's problem and treating the child as if they're the town drunk and projecting all the dysfunction of the family onto this one child, but really looking at themselves and using this as an opportunity to open their spiritual adventure or their spiritual life. So the exercises are designed to open those doors for parents.
You talked earlier about how difficult it can be to let your kid hit rock bottom. And I know that, you know, other interventionists and counselors will talk about families holding bottom lines when it comes to getting their loved ones into recovery. But this must be so hard with young children, especially if they live in your home and have no income and may not have anywhere else to go. I was hoping you could talk about holding bottom lines when you're dealing with a young person.
It is a horror story for a parent to have to draw the bottom line of saying, you get help or you can't live in my home anymore. As painful as it is extremely effective. When we negotiate boundaries with the addict, that they continue to test them, continue to get sober for a few days, and then relapse. It's when we hold the boundaries firm and we are clear about what the consequences are and follow up on the consequences and give them choices. So it's not, I'm throwing you out unless you stop using. It's, I'm throwing you out unless you go and get help. And these are the places I found help for you.
I guess I feel the need to end this on something optimistic. So I'm hoping that you can speak to the recovery process and maybe give us some hope, because certainly a lot of people are struggling with addiction no matter what their age. And I feel the need to end this on something hopeful.
One of the things that I think that we struggle with constantly is the role of nature and nurture in addiction. Nature and nurture, of course, have a say in who and what we are, but they never have the final say. And I have seen so many incredible resurrections of young people, of old people, people who thought their lives were over, people who thought they could never unburden themselves, come into full bloom and to become fully human, to be on the edge of oblivion, and to find real change in their lives and find a richness and a fullness that they never imagined. And to me, that is why I'm in this work, is because it is one time after another, one blessing after another of witnessing people coming into their fullness of human as human beings, not only in what they say, but what they do.
Reverend Harper, thank you so much for talking with me today. I really appreciate it.
Likewise, Julian.
Reverend Charles Harper is a counselor at the Betty Ford Clinic and the author of Amazing Grief, A Healing Guide for Parents of Young Addicts.